Welcome back to Ruthless Aggression. I am Pierce. I'm joined by Rob and Chris. We got a lot of September to kind of grind through. But before that, remember last time earlier this week we met and we were like, we don't have to talk about cuts. No one, anybody significant released. Well, that came a couple days later. We'll get to that in a little bit. But first off, there was some massive, massive news that kind of clouded all that. It was really good PR from WWE on that front. And that was that they pretty much just doubled, or at least guaranteed that they're going to double or triple their rights fees on this next upcoming one. Is that's because they sold one show instead of two. SmackDown is going back to USA Network. It seems like it's going to stick around on Friday nights, which to me is like the appropriate time for it. 5 years, 1.4 is what I'm seeing for bringing the blue band back to the USA Network. And they got what, 2.6 for the two shows?
Yep.
So, and back in 2019 when they signed the deal with Fox and USA. So, very interesting. There was a lot of, you know, suspicion thrown into the air about what does this mean for Raw, because it wasn't a guarantee that Raw and NXT will stay on USA. More likely that they won't. But also, it's just like a crazy deal, and it's bringing, it seems like WWE's kind of done with broadcast television for now, whether it's for better or for worse.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, based on things that I've looked into, based on stuff that's available, I believe Sports Business Journal or another area had this. The justification for Fox appearing to cool down on WWE, it was basically that ad rates for SmackDown were going down, whereas ad rates for college football were going up. So they decided to balk, and obviously WWE went with NBC Universal. Logical choice. They've obviously had a relationship with them forever. That's why I kind of didn't. That's why I initially thought that they were just going to buy them when they were up for sale. But obviously they went with Endeavor instead. I'm not sure what it means for Raw and NXT, because in theory they could just buy them up too and just keep it all under one umbrella. I do think a streamer is possible, like Amazon, or maybe Disney buys them and they go to FX. I'm not super buying into this idea that Raw is going to change nights. I think if they did, it would probably go to Tuesday and NXT would shift up to Thursdays. But I don't see that happening, even if they've given themselves the freedom or said that they were. I thought that for months, even if Nick Khan has been on point with things, he's probably just negotiating through the media and saying, yeah, our options are all on the table. But yeah, it's a fine move for them. I think the only thing I could ask is, are they going to add an out? Because maybe they can, maybe they will, but I don't know.
I guess I'll come back to the out part about that in a bit. It's definitely posturing when it comes to Raw, because
the
appeal of Raw isn't necessarily, it's a TV show. Raw is a Monday Night Raw is an institution. Yes. Monday Night Raw is a brand. Yes. You move Raw, Tuesday Night Raw doesn't fucking hit the same. So
no.
Raw being on Mondays matters and needs to happen, whether it's on ESPN or FX or USA. It's gonna have to stay on Raw. SmackDown was always the more movable night of the two.
Yeah, well, and also, like, if they're gonna keep running pay per views on Saturdays, then you have 3 days before the next TV. It just exactly. 2 days is already like tough enough compared to how it was for the past 25 years.
Right.
Still been kind of a shift from Saturday to Monday, but from Saturday to Tuesday, it'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah, you're losing a lot of luster. That folks have to wait three nights now to get some resolution on a couple of things, and then wait three nights later for SmackDown to come on for more stuff. You got to whet the appetite a little bit, and moving to Tuesday nights doesn't really make much sense to me.
Agree there. And Raw, I think also the thing that they risk there, you said it yourself, it's an institution. You're throwing a lot of people's viewing habits out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
And you risk them getting attached to something else on Mondays or whatever. And maybe they don't care as much as now it's on a Tuesday. So
Monday night is years, man.
Yeah.
That's 30 years of something being on the same. Imagine if what's a show that just has been always been on the same time slot, the same night
for you could argue Monday Night Football. Night.
Yeah. Well, it's been. I guess now like Thursday and Sunday, it's kind of like it can happen.
Yeah, night. It's a little but inundated like, now. But yeah,
right. But I guess like I was gonna say George Michael Sports Machine, but like who the fuck is watching sports at 11? Yeah, I think that's a fair one because it's Sunday or Meet the Press. Let's just kind of look at this from a news perspective. If you're someone that's always in tune, you know that Sunday you're going to see Meet the Press at 10 o'clock in the morning. You're going to see 60 Minutes at right after the football game at 7 o'clock. Understandably, there might be some things that preempt it, but you're never going to see or Dateline in 2020. You know Dateline. 2020 has been on Friday nights as long as I've been alive pretty much.
Yep.
So you know you're going to get a news magazine show every Friday night on ABC. You're just not going to move it like that. And so Raw has become that. The Simpsons on Sunday nights. Raw has become that. And so moving Raw off of that night, just it doesn't make much sense to me. It's a bad branding move for WWE. It's just kind of dead. Now, I think the thing that I did enjoy hearing from this new, I guess it's not the new deal, but at least SmackDown's deal with NBC Universal, is that they are going to do 4 primetime specials a year for NBC, where that's going to be Saturday night's main event coming back, or something a little bit different. They'll at least stick around in some capacity in prime time, and NBC having some killer wrestling shows is going to be very beneficial if they don't use them how they're using them in 2007, as we're watching right now.
That's the thing, like, because you got to make them different, right? So, like, if you want to do like a Worlds Collide there or whatever, like a Raw versus SmackDown show, assuming you're not doing it, you know, every week or whatever, that's the time you bust that out, or because then you run into the risk of Saturday Night's main event just feels like an episode of Raw or SmackDown, it's not special.
Yeah, would you think they would put one of the nights of WrestleMania on NBC?
I mean, it's already on Peacock. Like, it's not the worst idea.
Like, if you did the first night on NBC, teasing to the second night on Peacock.
Yeah, I would do it.
I would be fancy too, because I think at this point it's not about the money or how much money you get from subscribers. I think saw something on from Peacock the other day. It's like, you know, they care about who's streaming within the first 24 hours. You know, these streamers, they want to know who's watching within the first 24 hours of something dropping, not necessarily, right in that moment. You know, it's within the first day or the first 3 days or the first week, depending on, you know, what the show is. So, you know, if you put it on NBC as compared to, if you put Night One on NBC as compared to Peacock, I don't think it's much of a big deal. You just kind of have to, you know, be crafty in the way of advertising. So you're not missing matches because now you got to go to a commercial break or now you have to do a squeeze in. So that might be the trickery when it comes to that. But very interested in what they do with Raw in NXT, whether that's a package deal, whether NXT winds up going back on Peacock and just being kind of like a true development. I don't think it's best for that. I think it's best to try to sell that to something, whether it's FX or you know, when it comes to Disney or even Amazon. Like, yo, if you do put it back online, you know, you gotta come up with a deal with Amazon and really get some money on it. It can't just go on Peacock. But
yeah,
those are my little cents about that. WWE had nearly 24 releases right after that new TV deal was announced. This might be in backwards order, which is just the complete list of who was let go this week. Matt Riddle. So my girl's thrilled because she no longer has to see his feet. Dolph Ziggler, Shelton Benjamin, Elias, Mustafa Ali, Emma, Riddick Moss, Aaliyah, Top Dollar, Rick Boogs, Massey and Mansoir, Dana Brooke, Dabba Kato. I forgot him and Shanky were still there. I just saw this one, but Ike Manjiro got cut. He was fun. I mean, he didn't really serve a purpose, but he was fun. Yalisa Leon, who I don't think that's what's her name. Quincy Elliott, Bryson Montana, and a lot of other fucking people from NXT that I've never heard of. So of that list, because I feel like most of those are kind of like, yeah, they weren't doing anything. I guess we could single out a couple. The whole Matt Riddle situation, like, he was dead to rights when that shit happened. So yes. Nobody was shocked waking up on, well, I didn't see his tweet Friday night. So I woke up Saturday like, oh, Matt Riddle's cut or whatever day that was. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, he absolutely should be.
Yeah, I mean, he just ran out of chances, really. Like, if you followed anything about him the past few years, you know kind of what's been going on and how he probably should have been gone a while ago. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, he was talented and he just did it to himself.
Yeah, I think that my only gripe about the release is the fact that there were so many people who were acting confused as to why this happened and whatnot. Like, you haven't been paying it, like Rob said, if you haven't been paying attention. But if you're online and you post about Matt Riddle, you know exactly why people don't like him. You know exactly why there were people who were celebrating his release. The only thing that I'll say on that is you end up doing it to yourself at some point. You run out of chances. You run out of sympathy for people. And it's like, in his case, he had the sexual assault case. They stood by him. They bit the bullet. They kept him when they absolutely did not have to. And nobody would have blamed them if they got rid of him. And all he did in return for that was continue to show why they shouldn't have done that in the first place.
Yeah.
So
the issue with the new girlfriend, who I think might have been a porn star, I think there was the rumors about him and Damian Priest doing a little bit too much activity. But, you know, Damian Priest is going to survive that because he's got value. Matt Riddle doesn't have
value. Also they pulled Priest away from that. They have him hanging out on the road now with Finn. They have him hanging out on the road with Dom and Rhea and whatnot. They're not causing any trouble. And now Priest is a star. They have him looking like a star, building him like a star, projecting him that way with the case. They're laying all the groundwork out them. And part of that was because they got him away from Riddle. He's a problem. He's toxic. And he was going to eventually get himself in this corner because he just kept doing stupid shit. So from that perspective, I don't blame people for dancing on the proverbial grave of him getting fired.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say that about anybody else, but for him, in his case, sorry. I mean, once a bozo, always a bozo.
I'll say this about the folks dancing on his grave. Those same folks on Wednesday were like, why is Matt Riddle not getting cut and Riddick Moss is getting cut? You know why. You know why Riddick Moss got cut. You know why some of these people got cut. We don't need to throw out the what about game when folks unfortunately lose their jobs. Because look what happened. Matt Riddle was one of those people. Sit around, be patient, and good karma will come around. Otherwise, you just sound really piss poor.
Agree there.
Dolph Ziggler, gosh, damn near 20 years with the company. And like, it was a shock that it lasted this long. It's not like he wasn't a valuable hand. There's a reason he was still on the roster. But he was money that was being, you know, just wasted on the sidelines. And as much as I love Dolph Ziggler, I think he's a great worker and a great wrestler, WWE has grown past the need for Dolph. You know, Dolph really grew past the need for WWE, and he should have left a while ago, but he didn't.
Yeah, and it seems like he's been ready to be done there for a couple of years now. I think you can reasonably say, too.
You can see it in the body language.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, good for him. Like, he did have a good career. They probably could have done more with him at various points, but that's true about a lot of people. But it happens. I mean, what are you going to do?
I think that for me, for Ziggler, there was a certain amount of fatigue that kind of set in around 2017, 2018. Maybe not all of it is his fault. Maybe it's, you know, he wanted to do things differently. They didn't want to because they felt like what he was doing was good enough for him and whatnot. And they thought, if it's not broken, don't fix it. But I know for me, like, one particular instance that was just really annoying was the time he quit on TV while he was the U.S. champ. Anymore. And then he showed up in the Rumble at number 30 anyway. What are we doing?
Fucking
here,
pissed me off. It was so goddamn pointless.
So pointless.
Shelton, go ahead.
Like, that to me just, like, screams, you don't know what you're doing with this person, so you're just doing whatever.
Yeah, and like, he didn't even stick around after the fact. I think he went back into obscurity.
He did, yeah. He did go back into obscurity. He didn't do anything after that. So it was like, okay, what is the point? What are we doing here? So for me with him, it's just like, okay, if we reach that point, and they got him around back, I think the stuff with Braun really helped him. Braun, that is, have him beat somebody who had legit cred. But, you know, if they were paying him a lot of money and they felt, you know, it was not necessary if they weren't going to use him, it's callous. It is what it is. That to me looks like a situation just like sports where, you know, someone maybe there, maybe they're owed too much money and they just want to get rid of him. Yeah. It is what it is.
Shelton Benjamin should eventually go into the Hall of Fame in my eyes. There wasn't really much else for him, but Cedric Alexander is now solo, so we'll see what happens with him. Elias, the character ran its course once they decided to make him Ezekiel.
So, even that they got a couple months out of, though. Like, the Kevin Owens stuff was good.
Yeah, no, it was good, and I guess they probably should have just stuck with it, because you went back to Elias and like it was the same old shtick. So, hey, what was. Sad to see Emma go after coming back a year ago and doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
You know, now her and her fiance are now probably, what, Impact bound, I would assume?
I would guess.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. Aaliyah, if you followed the career track of Aaliyah, this isn't
true. She's been there since 2015. Yeah.
She was on Breaking Ground.
Yeah.
She was in the same recruiting class as Apollo Crews and Billy Kane, Peyton Royce.
Yeah.
And Rich Holland.
And I would say, like, her journey on that show was really, you know, fun to watch and rooting for her. But, like, you know, if you followed last 8, 9, 10 years, this isn't a shock to happen now. Top Dollar, not to the point of Matt Riddle, but similar to Matt Riddle. If you continue to run your mouth and you continue to cause problems, you're going to be on the chopping block. It says a lot that B-Fab and Ashante were not let go, but Top Dollar was.
Yeah, I mean, there's a level of guy that can get away with that sort of thing, and I mean, he's not one of them. And I mean, I thought the Michael Cole stuff was all a bit, but it might have just been Michael Cole genuinely didn't like him.
I mean, there's bits and recurring bits on TV, but like when it's that like emphatic, you start to think that, you know, it's probably not just that.
They're trying to tell him something. Rick Boogs. So Richard Boogs has gone on record in the last day or two in saying that his release was politically motivated. And he believes that had Vince not gotten usurped and kicked out of power, that he would still be there. Yeah, no fucking shit, Sherlock.
Yeah, he's right.
Fucking shit. If you didn't blow out your knee, and a couple months later Vince was knocked off the board or whatever, you would still be there. Because Vince likes shit that doesn't make sense.
I liked him. I mean, it was fun, but it's another kind of case where a character kind of benefited from the Thunderdome and then had a nice little run after they got out of the Thunderdome. And
I don't even remember him in the Thunderdome as the thing.
No, Boogs was the thing with Boogs. It's like, you know, he was cool for the life drama, but sort of just like less of a shelf life than Elias, because we already saw the guitar player. And it's like, yeah, but also you do have to work, and he wasn't great at that aspect. So
listen, I know he got hurt, but he did have a WrestleMania match. I mean, that's something.
On the WrestleMania card, good lord.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess the last one maybe that's relevant is Dana Brooke. Dana Brooke, wow. Who's the male equivalent to Dana Brooke? Like Stevie Richards?
I don't know, man. Stevie Richards.
I mean, yeah, Stevie Richards was good. So
he was good.
Never mind. I just think, like, for somebody to have stuck around for as long and like to have possessed zero value to the company in that time span is amazing.
Listen,
that's not really a shot to Dana Brooke as, you know, a performer or whatever. It kind of is what it is. but not once, even in NXT, did they take her seriously.
No, and, you know, her thing was always like, why don't I get chances? I work hard. And it's like, well, I you probably do work hard. Like, that's not what
so
it is.
Everybody.
Kind of, yeah, that's kind of like a life lesson there. It doesn't matter how hard you work. If there's somebody that has it more than you, then they're going to get those chances and you won't. Like,
yeah.
It's a hard pill to swallow, but it's facts.
And she, you know, genuinely tried to make the 24/7 belt fun, like Truth did. I mean, she gets credit for that. Just that ran its course too, obviously. That feels like another era at this point.
My thing the entire time, I think it's been, you know, where's your viewpoint on where she belongs and whatnot? Like, they do need lower card people. Mm-hmm. Because the entire ecosystem needs them. However, I think for me, the fact is, for several years, they kept putting her in spots that, if you want to be brutally honest about it, the work didn't meet the level of placement that they were putting her on. And I think that it falls less on her at that point if you let it persist for that long. It becomes more of, okay, what are the people in charge seeing? What are their talent evaluations? How do they look at this? Because, like, again, I don't want to be disrespectful. I'm never going to have grand delusions. Like, I'm a great wrestler, and I know what it takes to be a great wrestler. But, like, I don't know what anyone could have seen more talented people have gotten less in that company than she did. I mean, she was, and, you know, everyone likes to say she was hard done or whatever, but it's like, hey, she was in every Women's Rumble for 3 or 4 years, part because they had to, part because she was there. She was on the Survivor Series teams. She was frequently in the Money in the Bank ladder matches, despite skill issues, I think we can call them, or whatever.
Yep.
So it's like they everyone has a hand in the fire in terms of what went wrong here. If anything, they just should have realized that she didn't have that and not put her in those spots. And it's like, when you option somebody NXT, like they did with her, it's like, okay, now it feels like it's a make or break situation. Everybody who goes down there always gets cheered, no matter who they are. And Natalya broke the sound barrier when she went down there and wrestled Cora Jade in 2022. Dana got booed. Like, that says it all, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah, that was unfortunately a long time coming.
Before we go back in time, do you think Cody finishes the story?
Yeah.
I agree. Let's go back to 2007. We got to get through this month of September, which, you know, quite frankly, before this run through, I didn't remember. Because it's a lot muddied. Cause you're like into the weeds of the Vince and his demon spawn story.
Mm-hmm.
Cena's wrap it up. Everything on SmackDown is kind of mid. So let's relive it.
Yeah. Well, before we really get into anything, we have a bit of news. On Thursday, August 30th, Sports Illustrated reported details of drugs received from Signature Pharmacy by 14 wrestlers. Now, this isn't the best time for a steroid scandal, given what's happened this summer. But
and also considering that in another sports entity, there's another significant steroid scandal that's coming out at this time. So everyone's
sure
just
is
trying to stop the drugs from flowing.
So the 14 wrestlers are Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero, Shane Helms, Randy Orton, John Morrison, Ken Anderson, Funaki, Brian Adams, who passed away a month earlier, Charlie Haas, Umaga, Edge, and Savon Grenier, who has been released. So, you're going to have some guys taking some time off here.
Yeah, and, you know, Edge was already on the shelf. I'm seeing he, like, probably purchased it in, like, February 2007. Chavo, 06. Not really significant until 07. I remember him looking real particularly jacked. Obviously, I feel like the dudes who kind of suffered the most from this, William Regal, his general manager at the time, and or is this before he becomes general manager? It's before he becomes general manager, and then it shit even gets even worse. Randy, who was just implicated and didn't necessarily suffer on television, but had to bear the stigma of it. And then I guess most importantly is Kennedy, because Kennedy was going to be a McMahon.
Yeah, he's had a fascinating year. Had the money in the bank and then wasn't out as long as everyone thought and could have just kept it and then had this and, you know, he was good too. I mean, they could have done it, but, you know.
Yeah, but there were also, or I think you mentioned Batista, Booker, Santino, Chris Master, Simon Dean, did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were also named.
Yeah. So, the whole really shitty situation, it forced WWE, well, the Benoit situation will, but, you know, all forced WWE to clean up their act and really try to implement drug policies and keep folks from not only using steroids, but, you know, it took a minute for them to even kind of lessen up on weed, you know?
Yeah.
They were super strict in the aftermath of this, so...
Yeah, and meanwhile, in the NFL, Rodney Harrison was suspended for violating the NFL steroid policy. Similar sort of thing, where his name ended up on a list, and that was happening a lot around this time.
Yeah, I'm sure that's really going to hurt the New England Patriots this year.
Can I just jump in here?
Yeah.
So since we're doing this most of September, first off, for you listeners who know that we always intersect with sports, we will definitely be doing 2007 Patriots updates every week.
Yeah.
That obviously was the story of the 2007 NFL season, as well as a couple other things. And of course, once we get our first break, I'll be talking about the beginning of the craziest college football season of all time, 2007. And we are starting off with a bang there when we get there. So Rob, back to you.
Yes. Oh, yes, we do.
Just kind of more broad news for the month. We got several performers that are going to be released. Eugene, Crime Time, and Simon Dean, who, again, was implicated before. Eugene was also implicated in the steroid thing. So they're both done. Crime Time's done because of, I guess they weren't super professional or whatever. And Caden Murdoch didn't like them. And it was a whole thing. But, you know.
Yeah, really stupid. And I mean, they really, because Caden Murdoch, those are the two guys that you want to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, those are two dudes who are upholding American citizens.
I mean, they do both come back, so that's good.
Yeah. I mean, all's well that ended well, I guess, apparently. But I still think that Crime Time served a lot of value as a tag team and as a babyface tag team. You could arguably say that at this point in time, they are the most popular babyface tag team in the company. For them to get cut, just it didn't make any fucking sense at the time.
No, exactly. Ric Flair has quit WWE because he's mad about his creative and how they're using him. And it's kind of easy to understand, really, dating back to WrestleMania.
Yeah. Dude, you're like, old.
I mean, that was the thing, too. Like, he was obviously... It was time to wind down, and he probably should have just stopped after, you know, what we're going to watch in the next few months here. But, like, they could have made it a bigger thing. Because even when they do the retirement thing, like, it's not as good as it should be. And I think we'll find that when we revisit it here. So, I don't know. Like, I get it, but they haven't really done much with him for being Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was really a big plus, as we've said oftentimes here. For when he started with the company, was that they made him feel like a big deal, even compared to WCW in some regards. I know they obviously always had the Mean Gene Ric Flair segments dedicated to them and the Four Horsewomen every week. Four Horsemen, sorry. you can't blame me there. I'm sorry for that one. Flair and the Horsemen every week, but he came off as such a star in his first like 2 years, like he was the Nature Boy, the 16-time world champion. And this year's just been a disaster. I mean, the Carlito stuff, the back and forth nonsense there, I don't blame him for feeling that way at all. That shit sucked.
Yeah, exactly. Sandman was also released, so he hasn't really been doing much. So, kind of. There you go.
Yeah, thank you.
Bill Goldberg said in a radio interview that he would like to form a wrestling union and he will never step in a ring for WWE again.
That's funny. Although he did have a point with the union part. But,
oh, yeah.
You know,
of course. Okay, so we can get on to our first week here. Top five songs breaking into the top five. At number five is Stronger. Staying at four is Heather Delilah. Three is The Way I Are. Two is Big Girls Don't Cry. And staying at number one is Beautiful Girls. Top five movies, debuting at number five is War. Debuting at number four is Mr. Bean's Holiday. Dropping down to three is Rush Hour 2.
Wait. Why is Mr. Bean's Holiday dropping in August?
Yeah, I don't know. If, like, maybe it means vacation instead because it's British.
Oh, yeah, because it's British.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it means.
Barn Ultimatum is up from 3 to 2, and Superbad is still at number one.
Yeah, the synopsis for Mr. Bean's Holiday is essentially, in the film, he wins a trip to France, but on his way there, he is mistaken for both a kidnapper and an award-winning filmmaker when he travels with both a Russian filmmaker's son and an aspiring actress in tow.
There you go.
Oh, I ain't got nothing interesting on Mr. Bean. I mean, it's Mr. Bean. It's Rowan Atkinson, man.
Yeah. Okay. So we got Raw from Boston. Randy Orton's here to start the show. He has no clue how John Cena walked out the champion last night. Cena should be thanking God that Randy didn't end his career like he's done to all the others. Next time, John won't be so lucky. That brings Cena out, and his dad is there, which is unfortunate. Cena says Randy lost last night, so he moves down and others move up. For example, Triple H is back, so maybe he should face Cena. But Cena doesn't have the authority to make matches, but he says he'd do it anyway, and William Regal comes out and says that they're not going to do that. Cena's going to face Booker, and then Orton tried to RKO him, and Cena dodged it, and Randy left. We got Vince McMahon on Carlito's Cabana tonight.
Then we have Triple H returning. Of course, he famously also returned at SummerSlam the previous night, which, going from East Rutherford all the way up to Boston, that's an interesting schedule. They usually don't do it that way.
No, that's tough.
I would have thought they would have been like Bridgeport or somewhere in upstate New York. That's not like Syracuse or Albany or something like that. Going up to Boston that quick, pretty quick. Okay, so we start off in ring action with Mr. Kennedy against Jeff Hardy, who's back. If you're wondering where he's been, well, what do you think? This got like 15 minutes. It was pretty good. Umaga came out, Kennedy fled, and Jeff Hardy got beat down. Backstage, Vince congratulated Kennedy on a great match. Kennedy wished him a happy birthday. Vince thanked him and said his middle name is actually Kennedy. I wonder where we're going with this. Vince was on Carlito's Cabana. Triple H came out. Humor, 10 out of 10. No notes for this segment. Got Cody, London, and Kendrick. We defeated the world's greatest tag team, Daivari, six-man tag. So that was fun. Then Randy Orton stormed into Vince's office demanding another title shot. Vince, however, said no, and Randy has to go out and prove that he deserves one. Maria and Beth Phoenix were going to have a match, but Beth beat her down instead, and it never really got going. But Candice Michelle will still not be intimidated by Beth Phoenix.
Yes. And Snitsky is with Todd Grisham, tells him that pain is his pleasure. So Snitsky's got another new element to his character, I guess. They're going to try it again with him. Good luck.
Okay.
Vince isn't going to wait 2 weeks to find out who his son is. He's going to do it next week. Regal tells Vince that his family will be there next week to confront him. How exciting. Booker and Cena ends in DQ when Orton comes out and beats down Cena. They do a 2-on-1 on Cena, and Orton goes to punt him, but instead punts Cena's father.
Which, iconic moment in Raw history.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you know anything about Cena's dad, he kind of deserved it.
Yeah, but it makes him a little bit happy.
All right, ECW from Albany. John Morrison's here to open the show. He bragged about defeating CM Punk again. Wonders who his next challenger will be. There will be a fatal four-way tonight between CM Punk, Miz, Viscera, and Boogeyman to see who's next for John Morrison. Kevin Thorne beats Stevie Richards. Elijah Burke beats Balls Mahoney. And then it's time for the fatal four-way. All three of them gang up on Viscera right away, which smart. Good move. Viscera tried to send Miz and Punk through the barricade, and they moved, and he sent himself through that, so he's out of the match. And then Punk hits the GTS on Miz for the win, and he will face John Morrison for the ECW title again.
Again.
Sure. Okay, we move to SmackDown, also from Albany, New York. The Great Khali is here. No one's happy about it. Teddy Long booked a series of matches to see who Khali's opponent will be. Next up for the World Heavyweight title. Finlay versus Kane and Rey Mysterio versus Batista. The winners will face off in the main event. We started off with Kane versus Finlay. Kane got the shillelagh and threw it from the ring to the stage, which was quite impressive. Hornswoggle distracted the referee, tossed Finlay another shillelagh, however, which was sly, shrewd, and Finlay used it to win. So the heel outsmarted the face here, despite the face looking like they had the overwhelming advantage. So Finlay moves on to the main event. Jesse and Festus are coming to SmackDown, as they've said, all summer now.
Oh, I'm so happy.
So one day, they will be here. Yes. We get MVP and Matt Hardy taking on Deuce and Domino, tag team titles on the line. Matt did most of the work. MVP refused to help. Matt slapped him, which counted as a tag. MVP came in, hit the playmaker. So, of course, they got the win.
Hell yeah. Vince wanted to see Batista. He says his first wrestling job was in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol Wrestling Center, so he could be Batista's dad because Batista's from Washington, D.C. Batista says that Vince is his dad and he let him and his mom struggle all those years, he's going to kick Vince's ass. He should.
Should.
Do it. Teddy Long and Crystal are getting married in 3 weeks. That's fun.
It's going to be excellent television.
Eugene was shooting t-shirts into the crowd, and Mark Henry came out and beat him down and said, whenever Undertaker comes back, he's going to beat him again, too. And then we get a spooky Undertaker video, and he'll be back at Unforgiven.
He will be. Then we get Rey Mysterio versus Batista. Finlay came out to hit Batista with a chair. Batista got the chair, tossed it away, shoved the referee, and got disqualified. And Finlay would rather face Rey because it's easier, so that's smart work by Finlay, who's been outsmarting everybody tonight. So he looks good right now. Vince and Coach did another comedy bit that both took too long and aged very poorly. We're still doing the Master Lock Challenge with Chuck Palumbo. That's how much steam this has now. Masters tried to cheap shot him. However, Chuck sent him from the ring. So, yeah. Next week, Jamie Noble is facing Hornswoggle for the Cruiserweight title. That's probably not going to go well. So we concluded with our main event, Rey Mysterio versus Finlay. Rey caught Finlay lacking, did a 619, hit the sunset flip Rana for the win. So he will face the Great Khali. Khali beat him up, but Batista made the save to end the show, and that was smack.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of was what it was. It's building the pay-per-view a little bit. It's not very good, but, nope. You know. Okay.
All right. So, before we get to the next week, let's talk about week one of college football. The preseason top 25 was topped by USC.
Yeah.
Came in with high expectations this year. Right? Yep. 2007 USC Trojans had, I believe that might have been Booty or was it Sanchez or Booty? Okay, so they had redshirt sophomore Mark Sanchez. Okay, and redshirt senior John David Booty. Okay, so yeah, probably was David Booty there.
Yeah, because they play then, Illinois in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. You're right. Okay, and then
that's another reason that you knew this fucking season is weird because we're out right. Illinois in the Rose Bowl. Illinois had good players in 2007.
So then LSU, West Virginia, Texas, Michigan was the top five. Rounding out the top 10, 6 through 10, Florida, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Virginia Tech, and Louisville.
Which goes to show that after winning a national championship, it's very obvious why people don't think Florida's any good.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, didn't even matter if they got another championship. They weren't wrong.
Some other notables in the top 25 before we get going. Cal was up at 12 to start the year. I believe that team had DeSean Jackson. Rutgers was 16th to start the preseason. Top 45.
This was a Ray Rice team, I believe.
Yes. Yes, it was. And then we got Hawaii at 23, and then Boise State at 24.
Was that Hawaii team, what's his name?
Chang? Yes.
Oh, yeah, Timmy Chang. I was thinking of a buddy that just passed.
No, yeah. Cole Brennan, yeah.
Cole Brennan was the quarterback.
Brennan year. Yep, that was the... Yeah, that was the Cole Brennan year. That's the year they went to the Sugar Bowl and Georgia demolished them. Okay, so first 2 days, nothing of note happened. The ranked teams took care of business. Boise State won 56-7 over Weber State. LSU beat Mississippi State 45-0. They blanked them. Louisville scored 73 points against Murray State. Rutgers won 38-3 over Buffalo. And yeah, that was pretty up. But then Saturday, things got kind of crazy. As you may or may not remember, Nick Saban started off his coaching career at Alabama with a 52-6 win over Western Carolina.
Yeah.
Cal beat Tennessee 45-31 in a top 15 matchup. So that was one of the big games of the opening weekend. Georgia beat Oklahoma State in a SEC Big 12 affair. Let's see. Nebraska won 52-10 over Nevada, I should say. Was there anything else
before we're here?
Yeah, I know why we're here. I'm just making sure I'm not forgetting anything else. However, I am not. So we must go up to Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Let's talk about the game that got Lloyd Carr fired.
Where Appalachian State walked in and faced Michigan, ranked fifth to start the season, and it could not really have gone worse for the Wolverines.
It could not have. Not even, let's just talk about this. 28-17 at the end of the first half. My God. It's even the FBS. And yes, I was like, it's even FBS. And yeah, the FCS, they were like the champions. They're like the top team in the FCS.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. You're number five of the nation. You're Michigan. Who was I think Mike Hart was running back. Chad Henne was your quarterback. Jake Long is on the way to being the top pick in the draft. Mario Manningham was there. Adrian Arrington is still there. They had players. Leon Hall, I think, was All-American the year before. Fucking Lamar Woodley was on the team. This team had – oh, no, he just left. But for this team to go to host the fucking Appalachian State, not only lose, but that iconic blocked field goal. Let me tell you, I have even though I don't claim that fucking team is South Bend anymore, I knew that shit was gonna happen yesterday. Called it. Go check the tweets. Called it at the buzzer. Called it. Despite that, I still harbor disdain for two programs, USC and Michigan. So to see that game happen to Michigan, the way that it played out, brought me so much joy. And not only that fact, they christened the Big Ten Network with that bullshit right there.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
A lot of people forget about that added element of how much that probably helped the Big Ten Network out, because everyone couldn't really, not everyone could see that.
It drove
the demand for it.
Not only did it drive a lot of people to Big Ten Network, like I remember being very curious, because it was like the first of its kind, really. You know, the big conference having their own network, showing like their own Big Ten games. So, like, you know, in Chicago, it was kind of a deal to kind of watch. They took over the old Montgomery Ward headquarters, by the way, in Chicago, which is funny.
Oh, wow.
RIP to Montgomery Wards. But, yeah, that was the big joint, the big moment for the Big Ten Network. And they stuck, you know, one of their two biggest programs on there. It was the only place that you could see it. And, my God, it was like, yeah, you need to be subscribing to these channels because you're never going to know what happens. And honestly, like that game might have done wonders just for television rights, for college football television rights. Because every single game that you could think of, pretty much, you can find on TV or streaming somewhere. It made those games valuable. No longer was a game between a big-time FBS school and an FCS school, which should have been like a blowout game or like a preparation game. Those games started to matter again. So,
you know who the broadcast crew for that game was?
I'm looking at it.
Tom Brenneman, Charles Davis, and I believe making her sideline debut was Krista Thompson.
Crazy.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy Tom Brenneman was working for Fox.
Yeah.
Tom Brenneman. I'm sorry. I don't know why I got somebody else in my phone.
Yeah.
Drum deep left. But yeah. Crazy start to a crazy year.
Indeed. Okay. Yeah,
piss off.
Let's move to the following week. Rob, if you want to take over the song.
Yes. Beautiful Girls is down to 5. The Way I Are is down to 4. Stronger is up to 3. Crank That Soldier Boy is into the top 2 at number 2, and Big Girls Don't Cry is up to number 1. So,
really,
yeah,
for that to like make the leap it had, and for Beautiful Girls to drop, okay,
yeah, but we got Crank That Soldier Boy too.
Yeah, we did. That was
big.
That was a moment. Like, it's hard to tell the kids, like, how Soulja Boy grew in popularity, because like it'll just so many fucking people just grow the way the Soulja Boy did. But
yeah,
this is 2007. Like the blogs and the internets, like it wasn't what it is now. So for folks like Soulja Boy to like really get on and get popular, and like this was around the time like the dance crazes were everywhere. Everybody had a fucking dance. So folks just kind of gravitated to Crank That. And then if you go back and listen to like the early Soulja Boy shit, y'all, bitch, y'all, it's senseless. It's absolutely senseless, but it was good music for the time if you are of that age. Defining high school rapper for me is Soulja Boy.
Yeah, agreed there entirely. Even as a white kid in central New Jersey. Pretty hilarious. the whole thing with the Crank That, obviously Devin Hester made that a thing also before kickoffs. That was always cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. On to movies, though. We have a new number one.
We do. Down to number 5 is Rush Hour 4. Down to number 4 is Bourne Ultimatum. Rush Hour 3, my bad. Up to number 3 from 13 is Balls of Fury, which is a movie about ping pong.
Oh, yeah, I remember that movie.
Who was in Balls of Fury?
That
wasn't a Will Ferrell movie.
No, I don't think so, because he did Blades of Glory.
Whoever Dan Fogler is?
Yeah.
Dan Fogler, Christopher Walken, George Lopez.
Yeah. That's
it was a Harry Cruz.
It was like a weird time for ping pong, because like one of the 360 launch titles was the Rockstar Ping Pong game too.
Yeah,
it's very strange.
Runtime of 90 minutes.
Yeah, God, not bad. Down to 2 is Superbad, and up to number 1 is Halloween, which the 2008 one or the 2007 one's not very good, but
no,
also seems too early for a Halloween movie.
You would think.
But, you know. All right. Got Raw. Labor Day from Columbus, Ohio. Jeff Hardy against Umaga for the Intercontinental Championship. Umaga dominates most of the match, but Jeff gets a surprise pinfall and wins the belt. Umaga needed to lose the title because he isn't going to be around for a little bit.
He is not.
Vince is the turnover here.
Yeah.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, I'll save it. You're good. Go ahead.
Vince's attorneys are here. He tells Carlito that they're going to treat Triple H like family tonight after Triple H humiliated them both last week. Carlito's going to team up with Umaga, who is angry now because he lost the title against Triple H. Melina tells Regal all the things that she did with Vince for some reason, and then Linda shows up and slaps her, and then Ron Simmons goes, damn, which was funny because that part's always funny, but the rest of it was bad. Beth squashes Maria again. William Regal's in the ring, and Randy Orton's here via satellite. He said that it's Cena's fault for what happened to his dad. He could have just accepted Randy's challenge, but now it's personal. Regal books the match for Unforgiven, and Cena comes out and attacks Regal. He's real mad.
Yes, indeed. So, we get to the back half of the show. London and Kendrick face the world's greatest tag team and defeat them, and they will face Kate and Murdoch at Unforgiven. Cody and Mickey James win a mixed tag team matchup against Daivari and Jillian Hall.
What a team.
What a team. My God. Triple H wrestles Carlito and Umaga. Carlito and Umaga got disqualified right away. Triple H fought back and sent Carlito running and hit him with a sledgehammer to right and wall. And move on to this main event segment, in which we get 20 minutes. It ends with Kennedy coming out and saying Vince's son will reveal himself next week in Green Bay, which is Kennedy's hometown. A lawyer came out and said Kennedy's not the son, and we'll learn more this week. A lawyer gave a clue about who the son is, saying things are looking up.
Yeah, this is going to get real stupid.
This is going to be so dumb.
And listen, if Kennedy was the plan and now he can't be, that's fine, I guess. But you could have maybe just did it anyway. And
why wouldn't you at least milk it for a little bit? Even if it turns out to just be like a red herring, just milk it.
That too. I mean, you're writing the show. You can do whatever you want.
You can do this however the hell you please. Why would you be so snappy with it when the idea is to hook people in the audience?
Mm-hmm.
A theory or something can play out and have it not be the end game, and the audience can understand that.
Yeah, it's exactly.
It's stupid to do that, especially considering they said that it's going to be in Green Bay. What do you think people are going to think? Come on, man. Build up drama for your shows.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to get blitzed by Monday Night Football anyway, but try.
Yep.
Damn.
ECW from Cincinnati. CM Punk is wrestling John Morrison tonight for the ECW Championship. Armando Estrada says it will be Punk's last chance. Boogeyman defeats Matt Stryker. Miz defeats Balls Mahoney. Kevin Thorne and Elijah Burke defeat Tommy Dreamer and Stevie Richards. And then we get to Punk against John Morrison. And listen, the crowd's super into it, you know, mm-hmm. for as many times as Punk has tried and failed to win this. And it's probably the best of their matches. Definitely go check it out. And Punk wins and the crowd goes wild. And he's the ECW champion now.
He is.
So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah, good for him. By the way, the Labor Day game for college football, Clemson beat 19th ranked Florida State in Death Valley 24-18. This despite the fact that Clemson did not score a point in the second half. So they had an incredible defensive effort in the second half, obviously, because FSU scored 15 points. They only scored 3 in the first half. So, yeah, shout out to the Tigers then.
Yeah.
Secondly, let's go to SmackDown here. Cincinnati, Ohio. Matt Hardy's the guest in the VIP lounge. He's mad about being tag champion with MVP and wants another shot at the U.S. title on Unforgiven. But MVP said Deuce and Domino cashed in the rematch clause, so no can do. Also, Matt is facing Deuce right now, and Matt Hardy defeats Deuce. Jamie Noble set a trap for Hornswoggle using Lucky Charms. Get it? Because he's small like a leprechaun. Chuck Palumbo beat Kenny Dykstra in the most velocity match that you could ever imagine in the mid-2000s. In a good match, Batista and Kane defeated Finlay and Kali. Kane pinned Finlay for the victory, getting some retribution from the previous week. Noble's trap didn't work. Hornswoggle apparently is not James Woods. And Hornswoggle put the Cruiserweight title in there instead and locked Noble under the box and got the win by countout when he didn't show up for the match.
There you go.
We conclude SmackDown, I believe, with, yeah, basically, yeah, an I Quit match between Rey and Chavo. Rob, take it away.
Yeah, last time they had an I Quit match, Chavo smashed Rey's knee and cost him 9 months of his career. So Rey starts doing that to Chavo. Then Chavo gets the chair and does it to Rey again. And then Rey kind of ties him up on the top rope and hits him with the chair again like Chavo did to him and gets Chavo to quit that way. It's good stuff. Chavo obviously is not going to be around for a while either. Great Khali comes out and beats up Rey after the match, and Teddy Long says that Khali will face Batista and Rey at Unforgiven, so maybe one of them will win the title.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, let's move to week 2 of college football. In Thursday and Friday night Big East action, both Louisville and Rutgers took care of business against Middle Tennessee State and Navy. So both the Cardinals and Scarlet Knights are out to a good start to the season. Top 10 Cal, who bumped up after their big win against Tennessee 10th, survived Colorado State who made a late push, but they were not able to beat the Golden Bears. Cal won at Colorado State 34-28. Clemson, their new top 25 ranking, they will stay shiny. They beat UL Monroe 49-26. Let's see. Hawaii just edged Louisiana Tech 45-44 in an overtime game, in which they just were able to hold on because Louisiana Tech could not convert on the 2-point conversion in overtime. They tried to get Hawaii. The game was at La Tech, so they tried to go for two in the win at home. Beat top 20 Hawaii. Gotta love the effort, but just didn't happen. Moving forward, LSU beat Va Tech down in a top 10 matchup 48-7. So Va Tech will not be in the top 10 next week. That's for sure. We talked about Michigan losing to Appalachian State, and that's the loss that everyone is always going to focus on that season. But Oregon came into the Big House the next week and absolutely undressed them. At least the game against Appalachian State came down to a buzzer. Oregon won 39-7. They kicked their ass. One of the biggest ass kickings I've ever seen in college football or otherwise. They dropped the hammer on.
Yeah, I forgot all about Dennis Dixon and Jonathan Stewart going crazy until just now.
Yeah. Yeah, they ran the fake Statue of Liberty. They threw some bombs to Spencer Paysinger.
Oh, wow, Ryan Mallett was on Michigan at this point.
He was, yeah, he yep. was. Wow. He was on there. RIP. He was their backup. Other than that, Ohio State won 20-2 over Akron. Oklahoma won 51-13 over Miami, so things are not going well in Coral Gables. Penn State beat Notre Dame 31-10. I forgot about that game. Forgot about that one. I think that was a whiteout game for Penn State. South Carolina upset Georgia 16-12 in Athens. South Florida, who we'll be hearing a lot about this season, went into Auburn and won 26-23. That certainly did not make the folks there happy. They won in overtime. Off a touchdown from Matt Groth to Jesse Hester. And South Florida tied it with 55 seconds remaining on an 18-yard field goal. So they were able to get a chip shot. They held a 14-3 lead at one point at Auburn. So that's, once again, the start of something big in Tampa Bay. Tennessee rebounded, 39-19 win over SMU. Texas beat TCU 34-13, probably a rare matchup with those two. And that's about it. So let's roll on.
Okay. On to the next week here. We've got top five songs. Staying at number five is Beautiful Girls. Staying at number four is The Way I Are. Down to three is Big Girls Don't Cry. Up to two is Stronger. And up to number one is Crank Out Soulja Boy. Like we just discussed, it was a moment. Born Ultimatum is down to number five. Shoot 'Em Up debuts at number four. Superbad's down to two. Halloween is down to one. And debuting at number one is 310 to Yuma.
I heard good things, but I've never seen it.
No, I've never seen it either. I've also heard good things. I think it got some award buzz, too. Like, just check it out someday. We also had the first week of the NFL, so we can touch on that real quick.
Yes, let's get to that. Work. Yeah. Good
yeah.
call. I don't want good call. Bit of
Bears happiness that I have today.
Yeah, the Bears lost to open the season, I believe.
No, they beat the Chargers.
No.
Did they beat the Chargers?
No, because there's a whole thing, because that's where Ron Rivera went, and it was their first game, and they lost 14-3.
Move on.
Yeah, it was. We're not talking about the Bears today. But elsewhere in the NFL.
Yeah, elsewhere in the NFL, let's see. The Colts started off the season with a 41-10 ass kicking over the Saints on Thursday night. Then elsewhere, let's see. The Vikings beat the Falcons 24-3. That's going to be the beginning of a terrible season for Atlanta.
Yep.
The Broncos edged the Bills 15-14 at Buffalo. The Packers beat the Eagles 16-13. The Patriots, we said it before, we will say it again. Every week we'll focus on them. The Pats began the year against the New York Jets. A little bit of iciness there between Belichick and Mangini. Despite that, the Pats kicked the Jets' ass. They won 38-14. Randy Moss caught his first of many touchdown passes from Tom Brady, a 51-yarder. Get used to that. That would be a theme. Wait a minute. The game was also...
I was going to say, you're not going to skip past the main part of that game, are you?
We are not. Okay, game was also highlighted by Ellis Hobbs, who had a 108-yard kickoff return touchdown.
I haven't heard that name in a while.
In addition to that, this is where Spygate started. So that was a whole fucking thing as well.
Things weren't already testy between Bill Belichick and Eric Mangini, this kind of just sent it up a wall. Illegal videotaping of signals, which, I mean, what, you're going to use it in one other game this season? It's not like you don't even know those fucking signals. They probably are your signals. Eric Mangini is an idiot. You think he's using other signals? You think he's so smart that he comes up with his own signals? Come on now. No,
that's true. The
Patriots were just trying to fucking get an edge. Although, like, I hate this moment, though. In the grand scheme of things, I hate that Spygate ever happened. Because Spygate gave people a reason to denounce the legacy of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Tom Brady had nothing to do with this.
No.
Agreed. Two things, actually. One, little This Week in History thing. Apple, on Wednesday, September 5th, 2007, they released a new selection of iPods, creating the iPod Touch, updating the Nano, and rebranded the classic iPods.
My God. Yeah.
iPod also, Touch. Life-changing. Yeah.
Although I hated it for years because it was like the first 5 or so years, it was only on AT&T.
Mm-hmm.
That stunk, man.
Yeah, that was bad.
Like, 5 years I had to sit through an Android because y'all wouldn't go to T-Mobile or Sprint.
So, one thing I wanted to touch on that I looked on from the current events here. I mentioned the Bills-Broncos game. That game is best remembered for something very terrible that happened. Kevin Everett suffered a life-threatening spinal cord injury during the game. I believe it was on a kickoff.
Oh, yeah.
So at the time, they said the surgeon who operated on him said he is unlikely to walk again, assuming that he survives. I believe he is able to survive.
At least a year a couple months later, he was walking on his own power, but like a year later, he was on the field.
Yeah, so a year later, he received the George Halas Award during halftime of the season opener between the Bills and the Seahawks in 08. Yes.
That's good.
Yep.
Let's see. Packers beat the Eagles 16-13, but Brett Favre is where he really starts looking like he doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, he stopped having it 2 or 3 years before.
Well, that's true.
Although this year he actually does have a renaissance because they get to the postseason and he just throws the interception to Corey Webster in the frigid cold.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
The Lions beat the Raiders 36-21. Not the best debut for Jamarcus Russell. I believe he started that game. The Sunday night game, of course, was you already know, Cowboys Giants. Cowboys won 45-35.
You already know because it was the Sunday night matchup for like 10 yep. years straight.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. The Monday night games, Cincinnati against Baltimore and San Francisco against Arizona because they were into the doubleheader thing back then. Don't get the doubleheaders now. It's weird that they're staggered. Rob, which one do you want to start by talking about Cincinnati-Baltimore or should I?
Yeah, we can discuss Cincinnati-Baltimore. The Bengals pulled out a 27-20 victory. TJ Uzomah scored midway through the fourth quarter, and the Bengals were able to hold on. Yes.
And they scored a 2 on a Rudy Johnson run. So we're getting all mid-2000s.
If I'm not mistaken, this was also the game where Chad Johnson broke out the Hall of Famer jacket.
I believe so, yes.
That was. Yeah,
I believe so. You're right.
Ed Reed had a 63-yard return touchdown. And, yeah, the Bengals are 1-0.
Meanwhile, the back end of the doubleheader out at Monster Park, what they called it then.
Oh, yeah, Candlestick.
They called the stick Monster Park by then, back then. The 49ers beat the Cardinals 20-17 with 22 seconds remaining. I do not remember this game being so dramatic, but apparently it was. Arnaz Battle scored the game-winning touchdown on a one-yard rush. And then Joe Nedney kicked the field goal. Matt Leinart looked to be in control. He threw a touchdown pass with 6:40 to go, but it was not to be. Before that, the Niners had only scored on field goals and a Frank Gore rushing touchdown to start the game. This is a weird one because I do not remember anything about this game at all.
You were probably watching Raw to see who Vince's son was.
Probably, I guess. But, no. Oh, God. No. Matt Leinart, 14 of 28, 102 yards, one touchdown, two picks, a sack. Alex Smith, 15 of 31, 126 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Sacked three times. That's ugly.
Yeah, not the best debut for Ken Whisenhunt.
No, not at all. Not at all. Good Lord.
All right. We got Raw from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Vince and Coach are here. He's ready to find out who his son is, and he tells the person to come out, and the Great Khali comes out. But he's not Vince's son. It's a ruse. Things are looking up. Can only refer to Khali, so it has to be him. Oh my God. But then JBL comes out and says maybe he's Vince's son. Then Jeff Hardy also comes out and says that he doesn't want to be Vince's son. He just wants to be ruled out because he loves his dad. Eventually, the lawyer comes out and says Vince's son will be revealed later, and it's not Jeff. And Jeff celebrates, and he has to face Great Khali later as punishment. They wanted people to watch that over football.
God.
Paul London defeats Lance Cade. Coach banned John Cena from the building tonight due to what Cena did to Regal last week. Coach isn't letting it happen to him tonight. We'll see about that.
Of course.
Triple H is in action again. Shelton Benjamin, rematch of one of the best Raw matches of 2004. Triple H wins with pedigree. He'll face Carlito at Unforgiven, and it's no disqualification, but just for Carlito.
Oh, okay.
Which is dumb.
It is. Randy Orton's here. John Cena's at home with his dad, as uncomfortable as possible. Randy said Cena became champion last year at Unforgiven, and here we are again going into Unforgiven. He's been doing well, but nothing has been personal for him until now. Things are different. John charged to the ring from the crowd, and he and Randy start fighting. So that's a hot segment going into the pay-per-view, I guess. Mickie James beat Jillian Hall. Sandman defeated Santino Marella. Great Khali defeated Jeff Hardy. This is weird and kind of dumb. Vince's son is either Triple H or Sandman. Just kidding, it's Hornswoggle. I'm glad we wasted everyone's time.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake.
It's not great.
It's terrible. That was your pivot? That was your pivot. I don't know if Vince McMahon was fucking cackling when he came up with this idea. Oh, I know who's going to be my son. I know who's going to be the fruit of my loins. That's not Kennedy. Midget!
Yeah, it's just...
dumb.
I'm glad it's over. Hopefully we're on to something better now. I don't really think we're going to be, but, you know. ECW from Minneapolis. Armando Estrada introduces CM Punk's opponent for Unforgiven, Elijah Burke. Miz defeats Tommy Dreamer. Matt Stryker defeats Nunzio. Mike Knox defeats Balls Mahoney. And in the main event, CM Punk and Stevie Richards defeat Elijah Burke and Kevin Thorne. Go to SmackDown, which is also from Cincinnati. Michelle McCool and Victoria are set to wrestle to open the show in an end of no contest because Kenny Dykstra and Chuck Palumbo get involved, leading to a mixed tag match where Chuck and Michelle beat Kenny and Victoria. Jesse and Festus are here. They're throwing Teddy Long a bachelor party tonight. There's a big, mysterious looking druid in the ring, and it turns out it's Mark Henry. He says he can play mind games just like The Undertaker can. He shows a video of all the damage he's done to people. And the gong hits, an Undertaker symbol appears on the stage, and it gets hit by lightning, then it's on fire. Voice says that Mark Henry will rest in peace. So, typical Undertaker feud here. There's another Diva Search coming up. It's mostly exclusively on WWE.com. Eve Torres ends up winning, has a nice little career, and seems to be doing well for herself now. So good for her.
Great for Victoria. And she got to be in the Hall of Fame next year.
Oh, yeah. MVP and Matt Hardy are playing chess. MVP's losing, so he sneezes and knocks the board over. Matt Hardy says he signed MVP for a match later tonight. But first, Shannon Moore defeats Jamie Noble. Domino picks up a win against MVP. Deuce and Domino will wrestle for the tag titles again at Unforgiven. The Divas throw Crystal a bachelorette party, and the big payoff is Big Dick Johnson shows up and dances around. It's very funny, you see.
Yeah. Oh, he's got a big dick. And he's big. His belly's big.
Kane and Finlay have a Belfast brawl. They're not in street clothes, so it's not a street fight, but they do start fighting before they get in the ring. Finlay puts a chair on Kane's hand and stomps on it and keeps working the hand and the arm, but Kane eventually big boots him off the apron. Kane gets ready to hit Finlay with the stairs, but Finlay hits him in the ribs of the chair and hits an air raid crash for the win. And then Batista is in action against Great Khali in the main event, and it ends in disqualification when Khali hits him with a chair, and they will obviously wrestle at Unforgiven here, so we can get to that real quick.
Yes. Let's talk. Do you want to talk CFB just before we do Unforgiven here, so we're not out of order?
Yeah.
Okay. So wanted to spotlight another Thursday night Big East game. The West Virginia Mountaineers beat Maryland 31-14. I want to talk about this because we have a 22-yard touchdown run from Pat White, three touchdowns for Steve Slayton, and several appearances by Pat McAfee here, who kicked the field goal and several extra points. So big win for the Ears. They're ranked fourth in the country, and they are really damn good right now. Big game happened down south. Nick Saban's Alabama Crimson Tide beat the 16th-ranked Arkansas Razorbacks 41-38 thanks to a last-second touchdown throw from John Parker Wilson to Matt Cadell with 8 seconds to go to win 41-38. So start to see the process at work there with Nick Saban. But game was also highlighted because Darren McFadden went off for two touchdowns. Peyton Hillis also had a touchdown here. Some names here. DJ Hall, Glenn Coffey, and then, like I said, Matt Cadell, the game-winning score. Let's see here. Boston College, led by Matt Ryan, beat Georgia Tech 24-10. So the Eagles are starting to rise up in Chestnut Hill. Clemson improved to 3-0 in the season. They beat Furman 38-10. Florida beat Tennessee 59-20. That was a beat down in that rivalry over there. Louisville lost 40-34 to Kentucky. So Commonwealth didn't go the Cardinals' way, so that's a big top 10 upset. Kentucky led by Andre Woodson. Let's see here. Just want to check something. Oh, man. Okay, that is the same. Okay, so Andre Woodson threw a touchdown pass with 28 seconds to Stevie Johnson for the win.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to make sure that that was the same Stevie Johnson who played for the Bills, because it was just Steve Johnson on a Sports Reference. So there's a fun fact there. Big win there for the Wildcats. Michigan did finally rebound and get on the winning side of things with a 38-0 win over Notre Dame. The Irish have lost two in a row now to Big Ten teams in Penn State and Michigan. Moving on here, Ohio State went to Seattle and beat Washington 33-14. Sorry to hear that on every level there. I couldn't despise two teams more. Oregon kept things going. They won 52-21 over Fresno State. Rutgers up to 13 will probably stay level and move up after beating Norfolk State 59-0. USC won in Lincoln in the game of the weekend against 14th-ranked Nebraska, 49-31. I remember there was a lot of hype for that one. That was a College game day game. Utah kicked UCLA's ass 44-6. UCLA was ranked 11th in the country. They certainly won't be after this week. And yeah, that was about it for CFB. So NFL.
Yeah, we can touch on week two real quick because it came before the pay per view.
Yep. Let's see.
What do we got here? We got there we go. First, starting with the Patriots, they picked up a 38-14 win against the San Diego Chargers to improve to 2-0.
That was a Sunday night football game.
Yes,
remember that.
It was. It's correct. Two more touchdown receptions for Randy Moss. Another three passes for Tom Brady. They will keep that connection going all year.
We got a pick six, 65 yards for Adelius Thomas. That's impressive. Oh, yeah. They went up 24-0 at one point. The one thing, of course, with the Patriots' scoring record this year, they're going to score a lot of points. We got a Stanley Morris touchdown too. I think I'm going to start keeping track of the unique touchdowns this year.
There you go.
Next segment, I'll have something for that.
The Chicago Bears improved to 1-1 with a 20-10 win over the Kansas City Chiefs.
Stop talking about them, motherfuckers. Don't even mention them, motherfuckers. They don't fucking deserve it.
The Lions picked up a win over the Vikings in overtime to improve to 2-0 on the year. Calvin Johnson with a touchdown reception. I don't know if that was his first. I don't know if he had one last week. We didn't look, no.
It's going to be a hard year for that man.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Well, no, this year's going to be fine because they go 8-8. There's a
still hard.
They go 8-8. There's a lot of hype for them, which is funny because I remember people were actually thinking they had some playoff hype when they faced the Falcons, and when the Falcons beat them, people were like, wow, the Lions are losing to the Falcons. You know, they were so embarrassing last year. And then everyone knows the story of that after that. So
yeah, that's true.
But last week, Calvin Johnson did score his first touchdown on a 16-yard pass from John Kitna in the third quarter. Lions actually kind of owned that game against Oakland. That touchdown got them up 17-0.
Oh, there you go.
They won 36-21. They scored twice in 50 seconds at the end of the game. I wonder what happened. Jeez.
Yeah. The Cowboys improved to 2-0 with a 37-20 win over the Dolphins. Looks like
this is, this is a big season for Dallas.
It is. The Packers pulled out a 35-13 win over the New York Giants, who are 0-2 now. Packers are 2-0. Interesting.
Yep. The Broncos won in overtime, thanks to a Jason Elam field goal, who also sent it to OT with a 20-yard field goal at the end of the game. So big win for Denver. Jay Cutler appearing here with a passing touchdown to Brandon Stokley.
Oh, yeah, we have to talk about the Bengals-Browns game.
Yeah, I was wondering when that would come up.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Bengals-Browns game, that insane 51-45 game.
That was absolutely bonkers.
Back then,
the Bengals, okay, I think the Bengals were pretty fine this year, but like relatively so. These are two mid-teams, and they were just throwing up points. Who was the Browns quarterback at this time? Because they had like three different ones.
Derek Anderson, who had a 5-touchdown game.
So it was Derek Anderson.
Carson Palmer had a 6-touchdown game.
Yep.
Yeah,
just crazy. Especially just like for this time in the NFL, like the Patriots coming out and doing what they did this year plus this, like I know everyone's used to all the points being scored this year and every year after before and whatnot, but like this is just unheard of. And it still kind of is to a degree because you don't see shootouts like this.
Mm-hmm. No.
But like this is nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the last really NFL one was the Chiefs-Rams game from Monday Night Football. Yeah.
It took until, 10, 11 years for there to be a game that surpassed that in points.
Yeah. Chad Johnson had 200 yards. Braylon Edwards had 146 yards. So, yeah, just offense all over the place. Okay, we can get to Unforgiven here. Not a great show. It's fine. Like, CM Punk opens with Elijah Burke. You know, they didn't really have time to set this up because Punk just won the title earlier in the week. He wins with a roll-up. It's fine for an opener. You know, people are, again, really into Punk, so that's good.
This
but
got 12 fucking minutes.
Yeah.
This is the longest match on the card.
Yeah, the card's weird. And part of it is because who the SmackDown champion is, because he's so bad that, you know, all of his matches need to be short, even if he's with Rey and Batista. You get MVP and Matt Hardy in the tag title match. And, like, this one probably could have had a little more time because, like, it was fine. You know, Hardy and MVP won again, which I wasn't really expecting. But, like, yeah, they did what they could with it. It wasn't bad. It just nothing really had any buzz either.
No.
Triple H is in the third match of the show, which crazy.
Yeah.
No disqualification just for Carlito. I mean, that kind of makes it just like a glorified angle.
Yeah.
I mean, and Triple H won anyway, and, you know, it just.
Triple H overcoming adversity. He couldn't take a sledgehammer to Carlito.
Yeah. Candice defeated Beth to retain the title, which.
Okay.
It wasn't bad. You know, Candice did get better while she was there, and, you know, Beth obviously became very good. I mean, it was okay.
It was solid. I mean, for 2007 and what they were allowed and what they weren't allowed to do, like, they did a fine job here, I think.
Yeah, I mean, given what both of them are potential, have the potential to do at this point, yeah, I'll give you that. I was just never a big Beth Phoenix fan.
I feel that.
I still think Beth Phoenix got over in an era where there wasn't a lot of good women to work with.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. I remember a lot of the chatter at this time was that, you know, people did recognize that Candice was improving and whatnot. She was dealt the hand she was dealt with. You know, mid-2000s Divas division is what it is. But she did a fine job here.
Yeah, that's fair. Kali against Rey against Batista, you know, a lot of it is just Rey and Batista going after Kali. And then, you know, obviously when they do that, one's going to turn on the other. But having Rey turn on Batista is weird because, like, Rey needs Batista more than Batista needs Rey there, but that's whatever. Batista ends up winning, so he's got the title back. So it's not on Kali anymore, which is very good.
Yeah.
Net positive, even though the match was bad.
Yeah.
Cade and Murdoch defended the titles against London and Kendrick. Another case where, yeah, it was fine. Like, it's probably the best match on the show, honestly. Like, they actually had the crowd going, and it was really well worked, but it's like, how much do you really care about Cade and Murdoch at this point when they've been there for 3 years doing the same act and kind of just in the same place?
Yeah, it's kind of like you're watching because London and Kendrick, even though the signs on the wall for them, they're still so damn entertaining in the ring. And they can fucking lead Cade and Murdoch through shit. So, you know, they were able to help make it work. I think the disappointing thing at the end of the day is just how much of a stranglehold Cade and Murdoch had over the Raw Tag Team division.
Yeah.
It wasn't a pleasant time.
Mm-hmm. So Cena and Orton, you know, they had a really good chance here to kind of right the ship and get the pay-per-view back on track. You know, they had the heat from the SummerSlam match and Orton beating up Cena's dad. And, you know, they start and it's going along and it's not bad. And then, like, 7 minutes in, Cena just won't stop beating him up. And they just do disqualification for what was the hottest thing going into the show.
Yeah, this was very disappointing.
And I know, like, Randy's going to be suspended or whatever, too. I get it. But, like, unless they felt like they had to suspend the guys immediately, which maybe they did because of how it looked for PR, like,
I don't even think that, because, like, they're going to give him the title the next month anyway.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like, what
he's getting the title very soon.
Yeah, like, what very suspension soon did he have to endure? You know,
that's true. They could have just done it here, and I don't know. Like, you brought up
the fact that, you know, he was champion last year at Unforgiven. Do a 1 year thing. I mean, for God's, how do you have Cena and Orton, and this is what you produce? Like, That's an indictment on everybody there. Like, they're two megastars. They're deserving of more than that. My God.
Yeah. Also, Cena's dad punts Randy.
Also, this show is we'll get to that in the main event, but I feel like this show is so weirdly arranged.
Yeah. Because, you know.
I don't think the main event should have been the main event.
No, not at all.
Well, listen.
We're like, okay, crowd loves The Undertaker so much, he's coming back. But that could have worked in the middle of the card.
If they like The Undertaker so much, why doesn't he open the damn show?
Well, because here's the thing. You can't have the Cena-Orton match finish the way it did if it's going to main event.
Then don't do that.
Then end it on the Batista championship one.
But yeah, end it on the Batista championship. That's what I told you.
Wins his first well, not first championship back, but he regains the title.
But you knew that match would be bad, too.
I don't necessarily think it's about the title being bad. I think you end it on the championship match, and it's a good moment to end the show.
Exactly.
The fact that now we got to sit through a plotting Taker and Mark Henry match to end the show, nobody wants that. And if that championship match Cena and Orton is going to happen, I'm not necessarily feeling it if that's the lead in to Taker and Mark Henry. I'm probably just going to say, all right, let's get ready so we can, you know, we'll be at the top of the steps. So once this match is over, we're darting out of the arena so we can get to the car and we can get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that's fair. Exactly. I mean, I think the match itself was good. It didn't need to be the main event. I mean, it was probably as good as their WrestleMania match, to be honest with you. And just, I don't know that we ever needed to see it again after the WrestleMania match, but it was fine. I mean, and, you know, Undertaker did a last ride on Mark Henry, which can't be easy. Because even with, like, just how heavy he is, he's just built, like, so solidly, too. It's, it's pretty crazy to get him up like that.
Yeah, kudos to Taker's strength.
Yeah, Undertaker gets the victory, and that was Unforgiven. And that is where we will cut it off for now.
Yeah, we'll finish up the rest of September, head into No Mercy. I was just going back through that pay-per-view, and I was like, fuck, that's a bad pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll pick up where we left off next time we link. I'm Pierce. I'm at Cameron Santo. Rob's at RobinNo31. Chris is at Chris M. Novak. At BarbersChairNet on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/BarbersChairDigital. Okay. It's been a very long day. I'm frustrated. I'm tired. I just want to forget this day ever happened. If you don't want to and you want to recap everything that happened in Kansas City, 79th and Hallis is going to be on fire. Scott got to ask Patrick Mahomes if he still thinks, if he still takes these games seriously against the Bears, if he still thinks of it. You know, go check out that clip online and wherever you listen. It's just bad. It's bad. So go pay attention to that. It's so bad, I don't even want to fucking talk about football, right? You really realize it hasn't been a 2-minute drill because, like, I'm dead when it comes to football. What am I going to do? Talk about the Eagles? I don't want to fucking do that. We will talk baseball because we're entering the final month or final week of the season. So 40-40 Club will have a final week wrap up. I pray to God that I have at least something to look forward to. Do your fucking job in Atlanta and Milwaukee. That's all I ask. That's it for Ruthless Aggression. For Robin Pierce, I am Chris. Please don't go wild in sadness, and if you do, do it with us here at the Barber's Chair. We'll see you guys later.